This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Prepare for a nationwide strike. That's the latest message from Nigeria's trade union side organization and Joint National Public Service Negotiating Council to public workers and civil servants.
That's reporter Chika Adua on the lack of progress in negotiating a new minimum wage in Nigeria. Details coming up. Also, an Al-Shabaab raid at a military base south of Mogadishu yesterday kills at least 20 Somali government soldiers. And police used tear gas to break protests in several Egyptian cities over the weekend and detained about 400 people. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, part of a school building collapsed in central Nairobi today, killing at least 7 children. Dozens more were injured. Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital.
What was supposed to be an ordinary day at Precious Talent Top School was anything but as a wing of the two-story building collapsed. Reports say the first floor of the building collapsed on children on the ground level. Images of rescue workers sifting through concrete slabs and metal sheeting to look for victims were broadcast on television. Education Minister George Magoha updated the nation on the incident.
We have regrettably lost 7 young lives to this morning's incident that occurred at around 8 a.m. as the learners in classes 5 to 8 were starting their morning lessons. 64 learners are admitted at Kenyatta National Hospital. Of these, 62 have soft tissue injuries, while 2 require more attention.
In Kenya's school system, classes 5 to 8 cover children between the ages of 10 and 14. Stephen Odhiambo says 2 of his children were at the school. He was among the first responders. I was here in the morning around 7. I tried to rescue the children, including my daughter, he says. We went home with my daughter after 20 minutes. She started crying. Her head hurts. I took her to a dispensary near my home. Odhiambo says his daughter was later transferred to a larger hospital for further treatment. One parent at the main hospital said staff have not given them an update on the injured children. The parent said by 8 I was in the hospital, they gave the child a number and he was in third stretcher. Since then, I don't know what is going on, whether he's receiving treatment. They told us they forwarded off all the names of the students in the hospital to the information center. I couldn't find the name of my child. They chased us away, saying the children would be treated. I'm here. I don't know what's happening. It's not clear why the accident happened, although some residents are blaming shoddy construction. It is being reported that cement was only used in the foundation of the building. Kenya has witnessed building collapses in the past. In 2016, a similar incident claimed the lives of more than 40 people. Contractors have been accused of not following regulations when constructing such buildings. Meanwhile, the government has closed the school for 4 days, with officials saying they want to make sure the rest of the structure is safe before students are readmitted. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
At least 20 Somali government soldiers were killed and 18 others were wounded when Al-Shabaab raided a military base south of Mogadishu yesterday. Security sources told VOA Somali service that the militants detonated a suicide car bomb at the El Salin military base, followed by an infantry attack. Molid Ahmed Hassan, a spokesman for Somali Special Forces, said the militants attacked the base in large numbers. A regional official said the militants briefly took over the base. Hassan said the fighting lasted about 40 minutes, insisting the troops defended the base. He said reinforcements have been sent there. Hassan said the troops killed 13 militants but declined to comment on the number of government soldiers killed in the attack. Somali troops seized the El Salin base from Al-Shabaab on August 6th. It was one of four bases in lower Shabale region recaptured following an offensive by the Somali military. Nigerian labor activists accused the government of not being serious about increasing the minimum wage after recent talks ended unsuccessfully. Now they're threatening to strike. Chika Oduwa reports from Enugu.
Prepare for a nationwide strike. That's the latest message from Nigeria's trade union side organization and Joint National Public Service Negotiating Council to public workers and civil servants. The call comes after talks between the federal government and labor groups ended in a deadlock last week. Neither party could come to an agreement on salary adjustment issues surrounding a new minimum wage increase that President Muhammadu Buhari signed into law in April. The law mandates that the lowest level of employees earning 18,000 naira a month, about $50, should now be paid a 30,000 naira salary, or $83. It's a 67% raise that would benefit workers such as cleaners, receptionists, security guards, and gardeners. It applies to the private and public sector, with a few exemptions like smaller businesses with less than 25 workers on the payroll. But members of the Nigeria Labor Congress and Trade Union Congress of Nigeria say the government is not serious about putting the law into action. A statement from the Trade Union Side Group, or TUS, read, TUS has given the government enough time to come to terms with workers' demands, but it appears that the only language necessary for government to act is a strike. Nigerian current affairs commentator Adeniyi Kunu suggested that President Buhari's approval of the new wage could have just been a political maneuver.
Since April, you'd have expected government to expedite action. I think very strongly that when the discussions were at its highest, it appeared as if the government gave it to the people just for political reasons, and the fact that there need to be some form of consolation going into the general elections that we had in February 23rd of this year.
He went on to criticize what appears to be insincerity from the government.
It is characteristic of this administration to more or less parry very salient issues. When you deal with the people that actually, you know, more or less till the soil of the nation, I think you should address their issues very importantly.
Poverty is on the rise in Nigeria. Numerous reports from local and international organizations show that the gap between the rich and the poor is widening. The country is still struggling to bounce back from one of the worst recessions to hit in 30 years. The nearly 11.5% inflation rate is why some workers say this wage increase may not actually be as good as it sounds. Jide Ologun, a lawyer and member of the Chartered Institute of Personal Management, explained.
You convert that to dollars, you'll be amazed that it's even lower than what it was in 2011 when it was raised to 18,000 naira.
He also said that since the Nigerian government recently approved a 5.5 billion naira allocation, nearly $15 million, for members of the Senate to purchase luxury cars, then it should be able to pay the new minimum wage.
So this, it's a matter of prioritizing.
The government is the largest employer in Nigeria, so millions of people in the country are paying close attention to this. This weekend, the Labor Minister Chris Ngige spoke in Enugu to address misinformation about the implementation of the pay raise. He said junior federal workers have begun receiving the new payment, but the real issue is the consequential salary adjustment for upper-level workers. For now, negotiations have been stalled, with no set date for the next round of talks. Chika Oduwa for VOA News in Enugu, Nigeria.
Police used tear gas to break up small protests in several Egyptian cities over the weekend and detained about 400 people who defied tight restrictions on dissent to demand President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's resignation. The Egyptian stock market briefly suspended trading yesterday as it fell by 5.3% for its biggest one-day loss in 3 years. While the protests weren't large, they raised concerns of a repeat of the unrest which forced out the leaders of Algeria and Sudan. NetBlocks, an organization that tracks internet outages, tweeted last night that Facebook, Messenger, BBC News, and social media servers were being restricted in Egypt by leading providers. Those detained include a prominent human rights lawyer who had just attended judicial investigations for several of those arrested. It appeared that the protests were sparked by several online videos from Muhammad Ali, an actor who lives in exile in Spain, who had urged people to hit the streets. He has called for more demonstrations on Friday. Sixteen past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Prince Harry, wife Meghan Markle, and four-month-old son Archie started their first family overseas trip by kicking up their heels after arriving in Cape Town, South Africa. They were greeted by two young boys who did a dance as the royals joined in. They have a busy agenda with 35 official events scheduled over the 10-day trip in four countries. The South African government has declared gender-based violence a national crisis. According to a new government report, a woman is murdered every 3 hours in South Africa. Many are assaulted and raped first. From Johannesburg, Tuso Kumalo looks at how deep the crisis is and how the government is proposing to address the problem.
These are angry women of South Africa recently protesting against gender-based violence that seems to be spinning out of control. Nomakhosazana Qaba, in her late 20s, says this violence now resembles a country at war against its women.
Enough is enough. A lot has been said, but still there's no changes. It's been years. We are being brutally victimized each and every day, every second. Am I next? It's fearing to live.
The latest wave of outrage was sparked by the recent murder of Uyinene Mkhwetjana. The 19-year-old University of Cape Town student was raped and killed inside a post office by an employee while she was trying to collect a parcel. The latest crime statistics released by the Department of Police reveal the depth of the crisis. Nearly 3,000 women were murdered between April 2008 and March of this year. This translates to 7 per day. The murder rate for South African men is also high, 50 per day. However, many of the female victims are brutally assaulted and raped before being murdered. In many cases, their bodies are disposed of in the bush, in shallow graves, or burned beyond recognition. Refilwe Mukhakabe has this message to men in South Africa.
Instead of you taking a life or instead of you raping a woman, seek help. Do not allow it to grow to a point where you no longer see me as a human being and you no longer value my life and you rape me and you kill me.
In unison, the women called on government and the private sector to provide funds to fight the scourge. It's a call the government could not ignore. President Cyril Ramaphosa recently convened an urgent joint session of parliament to find a solution to gender-based violence. The action plan he presented includes setting up a $68 million fund, beefing up the criminal justice system, improving the legal and policy framework around sexual offences and other forms of gender-based violence, and empowering women economically.
Those who are found guilty of such crimes should not be eligible for parole. And if sentenced to a life sentence, this must just mean what it is, life in prison.
Mbuyiselo Botha, a gender violence expert and member of the Commission for Gender Equality, agrees.
There are lots of women out there who still feel that the police have no clue about what domestic violence is, sexual violence is, Sexual Offences Act is. So these are the places that you can do immediate something about it.
These women say whatever the government intends to do, they hope it will happen fast, before they also become part of the rape and murder statistics. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
An underwater marriage proposal turned tragic off Zanzibar's Pemba Island when the husband-to-be drowned. Stephen Weber and girlfriend Kanisha Antoine were staying in the Manta Resort's floating $1,700 a night underwater room where the bed is surrounded by glass windows looking into the ocean. Video posted on Facebook shows Weber free diving outside last Thursday while Antoine was inside. Weber swam up to the glass and displayed a handwritten marriage proposal and a ring box. Antoine was excitedly accepting, but she never saw her American boyfriend alive again. An investigation has been launched into what went wrong. Malawi is trying to find ways to contain overfishing in its largest body of water, Lake Malawi. The third largest lake in Africa has long been the economic hub for thousands of fishing communities along the lakefront areas. However, locals say unsustainable fishing practices and climate change have led to dwindling catches, forcing some fishermen to look for alternatives. Lamek Masina reports from the town of Mangochi.
A crowd of fish traders gathers each afternoon and evening at a beach in the Magawa area, waiting for the haul from fishermen. But many of them return home empty-handed because of the increasing scarcity of fish in the lake. Michael Makwinja is one of the fishermen. He says, for example, today, those of us who went into the lake for fishing have made huge losses. We have just come with fish which can fill 2 5-liter pails, which was only sell at 2,000 Malawi kwacha each. This is a huge loss for us. Some fishermen say the fish have been depleted because of climate change. Others point to the increase of fishing vessels on the lake, resulting in stiff competition for the catch. The scarcity has forced the fishermen to double the price sold to the traders like Lucia Amidu. She says whenever they catch low fish, they sell at 70,000 Malawi kwacha per crate, but if we bargain it, it goes at 65,000 Malawi kwacha. To traders, this makes us make some losses, making us fail to feed our families. The dwindling catch has also forced seasoned fish traders out of business, with many of them switching to other alternatives, like Joseph Maida, who is a livestock farmer now. He says, it's like I'm killing two birds with one stone now. I use the dung for making composite manure. When I have run out of cash, I kill one goat and sell the meat. Meanwhile, the government is trying to sensitize communities on regulations designed to reduce overfishing. These include a ban on some fishing nets and a 2-month annual ban on fishing in the lake from November 1 to December 31. Neverson Nsusa is the district fisheries officer.
We have this period which we call closed season, where some fishing gears and fishing methods are prohibited. This is actually the time when fish do breed. So it's like we are trying to give some time to fish to freely breed and also grow.
Lakeside communities have formed committees to help reinforce the regulation. In some areas, the villagers have set up bylaws which have instant penalties to those violating the regulations. Noah Mwenyeheri is the headman for Mawudzu village. He says one of the penalties is we ban fishing nets of those who violate the bylaws. We do this to protect our environment because it's our children who will suffer in future should we allow bad fishing practices to continue. In addition, the communities are lobbying the government to extend the annual 2-month ban on fishing to 5 months in hopes the fish population will grow. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Mangochi, Malawi.
Ghana is famous for its cocoa, the main ingredient in chocolate. It supplies about 20% of the world's market. This year, the government announced plans to raise cocoa incomes, but cocoa bean farms are being destroyed with or without the farmers' consent as their landlords end their leases early, opting for other crops, development, or mining. Stacey Knott reports from the eastern region of Ghana.
Farmer Ama Sewa walks through land which once held her farm that supported her children and grandchildren. She had leased the land, growing cocoa and other crops. This month, a bulldozer cleared the land, and with that, Sewa and her family's livelihood. Farmers believe the land was cleared to make way for a cattle farm. In Asikesu, a cocoa-growing region of Ghana, hectares of cocoa trees, like Sewa's, have been destroyed. Farmers like Sewa have toiled for years growing their crops on land they do not own or have much control over. Sewa says the compensation she received was not enough, and now she does not know how she will feed her family. Another farmer, David Servor, also surveys what was once his land. He has been told to leave his home. Profits from his one-hectare farm helped pay his children's school fees.
About 2 weeks now, I've not slept before. Thinking, because all what I've done in my lifetime has gone forever. And it's like I'm alive, but I'm dead.
Ghana's cocoa industry is regulated by a government body that sets the price the growers earn from their beans. Earlier this year, Ghana added a $400 living income differential fee per ton of cocoa beans sold on the market, with the aim of improving livelihoods for farmers. The president of the Concerned Farmers Association, Nana Obwadi Obampua Boateng Bonsu, says ensuring a sustainable future for Ghana's cocoa farmers means protecting the crop on which they rely.
This is a serious challenge, and it's something that we have been fighting for so long, but then it seems government has put in wax in its ears because government is not all that serious about this cocoa issue.
Farmers losing their land is a major problem, Ghana's cocoa regulator says, and often the ownership structure of land is the issue, where farmers lease land from chiefs who later take it back when enticed by other developments. While the regulatory agency works with chiefs to combat the practice, it does not have the right to tell landowners what to do with their property. Officials say it offers legal representation to farmers to address compensation rates. Stacey Knott reporting for VOA News, Asikesu, Ghana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.